Okay, Chevra. So we're trying to do a Google Hangouts shiur, and I want to continue from what we were up to in the sugya of my Chanukah. If you remember, the last time we learned, we raised the question about how come when the Gemara describes the Yontiv of Chanukah, how come the Gemara mentions that they established the Yontif for Halel and Hoda'ah, and the Gemara does not mention that they established the Yontif for Hadlakas Haner, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so who remembers what we said about how come we don't mention anything about Hadlakas Haner?
It wasn't part of the
ritual. Speak louder again. Right, so what we suggested was that Hadlakas Neir wasn't part of the original establishment of the Chag, that the Yontiv originally was only for Hala and Hoda'ah, and Bisman HaMikdash Hadlakas Neir wasn't part of the Yontiv at all, because why do you have to light candles when you have a real menorah? That was one suggestion. We also had a different suggestion, which I think we went through relatively quickly. The different suggestion was that if the Yontiv of Chanukah is really because of the Neis HaMilchama, and it's not really because of the Neis Pach HaShemen, so if that's the case, so Hadlakas Neiros doesn't really make sense. Hadlakas Neiros presumably has nothing to do with the Neis of the Milchama. And therefore, at the time of the Neis HaMilchama alone, since that's the Iker Yontiv, there was no Hadlakas Neiros. Maybe later on they decided to institute Hadlakas Neiros as part of the Yontiv, but it wasn't originally part of it, because the Yontiv was originally established just for the Neis HaMilchama. Now, it's hard for me to tell if people can hear me or not. You can hear? Okay. That's two thumbs up. Shira, are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent. Okay. Do you want to maybe move over closer to the middle of the room so I could see you also?
Perfect.
Could I ask everyone who's there to kind of move over to the middle of the room so that way we have a better chance of seeing people? Okay. Okay. Miss Muscat is there, Liana. Excellent. Okay. So basically what we suggested is that the Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah is not connected to the Neis HaMilchama. Now let's just take this approach more seriously for a minute. This approach that the Yontiv of Chanukah is based on the Milchama, how would this approach learn the story that we just read over here, which is about the Neis Pach HaShemen? Right? The Gemara basically says, Mai Chanukah, and they tell us the story that they only found one jug of oil, etc., right? How does that connect? Why is this here? If the Yontiv of Chanukah is only because of the Milchama, so why are we telling you a story of the Neis Pach HaShemen? Does anyone want to take a stab at this one?
Isn't it so crazy to say that there were two miracles?
It's not crazy, but what we're suggesting is that the real reason for the Yontiv is because of the Milchama, and the Neis Pach HaShemen is something else. So if the Neis of Pach HaShemen is something else, what exactly is it doing here in this Gemara?
I mean, like, the article Shulchan said how it was just like a remez, sort of like that this
okay.
was...
Okay, it's just a remez, but let's try to add some teeth to it. So I saw in Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach Sefer, he has the following suggestion. Maybe the idea is that the Neis Pach HaShemen tells me how long the Yontiv is supposed to be. We have a Yontiv because of a Milchama. But is that Yontiv going to be 1 day, 2 days, 47 days? How long is that Yontiv? The answer is that the Pach HaShemen, the fact that it continued to burn for 8 days, that's what That's why Chazal made the yontif of 8 days. The yontif is really because of the mochama, but how long do I celebrate because of the mochama? I'm going to celebrate for 8 days, which the Pach HaShemen indicates. I think that is the best pshat. Now, Reb Shlomo Zalman adds a nekuda, which I think is worth thinking about. He says that they can't possibly establish a yontiv because of the Pach HaShemen, because the Pach HaShemen is really what he calls a hechsher mitzvah. Think about it. What exactly is the oil? The oil enables them to do a mitzvah. Do I make a yontiv when I buy an esrog or when I find an esrog? Right? That's not something that's worthy of being really happy about. I should be really happy when I shake my esrog. But when I buy my esrog, when I obtain my esrog, that's not really worthy of joy. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, if that's the case, the Nes Pach HaShemen is not really something that should give us a huge amount of joy. The Nes Pach HaShemen is just a Hechsher Mitzvah. It's the Mochama, right? The war, that's really the war is really what is worthy of celebration. So far, so good? Now, again, it's hard for me to tell if people have questions or if people don't have questions. Thumbs up. Thank you, Elisheva. Elisheva's, okay, everyone, this is like what they teach you in Azrieli when you give class, that you're supposed to ask the type of question that, like, everyone can respond to with, like, a thumbs up or, like, lifting up a whiteboard or something. Any of you have any idea what I'm talking about? Probably not, but that's just fine. Now, let's just go on.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
Hi,
Atara. Can you just move close? It's hard for me to see you. You're like out. You're on the outer limits of my vision. Hello, Atara. Yes, please ask a question.
The miracle of the Nes Pach HaShemen isn't just about the Hechsher Mitzvah. We're not only celebrating that we found oil. We're celebrating that they then lit the menorah and it lasted for 8 days.
Yeah, but let's be honest. The way the Gemara phrases it, it's just that they found the oil, no? The Gemara phrases it that they found the oil, that's a miracle, and then it lasted for 8 days. But you get the impression, in other words, what you're saying is that we're really celebrating the fact that the oil continued to light.
Right, that's a miracle.
So you're saying that's not really the Nes Pach HaShemen. That's like, in other words, you're arguing on what Reb Shlomo Zalman is saying. I think you're making a good point. Reb Shlomo Zalman is suggesting that the Pach HaShemen is like a Hechsher Mitzvah. You're saying, no, the real Chiddush of the Pach HaShemen is that it continued to burn for a long time.
Right, and that's what
the Gemara says. I mean, it's not wrong, Dad. Right. Mimenu Okay. So, I mean, I think that's a good point, but it doesn't really take away from the main thing that we're suggesting, which is that the milchama is really what led to the yontem of Chanukah. It's not really the oil at all. It's just about the milchama. Now, let's just talk for another minute about this. What the Gemara says, L'shana acheres kiva'um va'asa'um yomim tovim b'halel b'hoda'ah. That the next year, they established kiva'um va'asa'um, they established them as yomim tovim, as different days that are yontivs b'halel b'hoda'ah. First of all, you get an impression that the Gemara is saying that Chanukah are 8 different yomim tovim, no? It's not just one Yom Tov. We think of Chanukah as being a Yontiv, right? I think the Lashon HaGemara is that they establish them as Yamim Tovim, as many different days. Is that reasonable? Next, why does the Gemara say Lashana Acheres? Why did they only institute this the next year What about the same year? How come they had to wait a year before Chanukah is established as a yontiv? Any suggestions?
Well, it's possible that that year happened because they weren't sure what would happen a year later.
Exactly. So the Ritva has a comment over here where the Ritva says that they had to wait the next year because they didn't know how long the oil is going to continue to burn. Now, I think this actually fits in with the idea that we were saying a few minutes ago. The yontiv is really about the melchama, but how long do I celebrate it for? The pach ha-shemen, or the continuous burning of that shemen, that indicates how long the miracle is going on for. And therefore, right, the first year, they don't know how long the yontiv is going to be. Maybe it's going to be a 47-day yontiv. The next year, they realize that the oil continued to burn for 8 days, and therefore, they established an 8-day yontiv, etc. Okay?
So why would each day be a separate yontiv?
So why is each day a separate yontiv? So you get the impression that each day is a separate yontiv as follows. The Gemara in Erchin speaks about how come I recite a complete Hallel every day of Sukkot, and I don't recite a complete Hallel every day of Pesach. And the Gemara answers that the difference between Sukkot and Pesach is that Sukkot is Chalukim B'Karbon Oseihem. There's a different carbon every day of Sukkot, and that indicates that each day of Sukkot is a separate yontiv. On Pesach, each day you bring the same carbon as you brought the previous day, and therefore Pesach is all one yontiv the entire time. That's what the Gemara says. Now, on the level of a yontiv da'iraisa, I have something called the carbon that I could use to distinguish one day from the previous day. Each day is a separate yontiv because there's a new carbon. For a yontiv derabbanon, I don't know what I have to indicate that this day is a new yontiv than the previous day. The only thing l'cha'ora that I have to indicate that each day is a new yontiv is the nes, is the fact that there's a miracle on this day that did not exist on the previous day. I get the impression that Yamim Tovim over here means that every day is a separate yontiv precisely because there's a new miracle every day. Now, if this is correct, we're getting right into the question of the Beis Yosef, no? The Beis Yosef asks a famous question as to how come Chanukah is 8 days, l'cha'ora there was no miracle on day one, no? Isn't that the famous question of the Beis Yosef? It's like a yeshivish top 10, top 5, top 2, right? It's up there. It's right. Okay, thank you. I really appreciate the thumbs up, Elisheva. Yashikalach. But the idea is that the first day might be a day because of the Milchama, and the whole Yontiv is because of the Milchama, but how long am I supposed to celebrate this Milchama for? So I celebrate the Milchama for 8 days because the oil continued for 8 days, but fundamentally, the Yontiv is because of the Milchama, so day one does not require a miracle at all. That could be the pshat. Again, it's sort of draying. It's not exactly what we've been saying, but I think it's close enough that we could develop it. Take a look at the Tosis Harash over here. Did people see the Tosis Harash?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Tosis Harash is bothered by this same question, right? How come they established 8 days of Chanukah? The Nes was only for 7 days, because there was enough oil for one day. So Tosis Harash has three answers. Okay, who wants to tell me the first answer to Tosis Harash? Okay, should I tell it to you? Because I can't hear what you're saying anyway. So the first answer that tells us Harash is Shechoku as hapach l'shmona v'hedliku b'chol layla shminis. That each night they lit 1/8 of the 1/8 of the oil. Now this is kind of hard to understand, no? The oil is supposed to burn me erev haboker. It's supposed to burn all night. Hello? I'm not sure what that meant. I think I have to show up in person, because like giving these shiurim through technology is like not working as well. Although it seems like everyone's having more fun than usual, so that's a good thing, right? Okay, so basically the Tosfos HaRosh gives one answer, that they divide the oil up to use 1/8 of the oil every day. Now... Hello, yes, Sophia.
No, we call out the sense that we're saying that each day, literally, the Yom Tov is fresh.
Each day is what?
If we're saying that each day is a separate Yom Tov, as long as it's in, I guess, will be a separate, that makes sense if it was split to 1/8 versus if it was just that it lasted for 8 days.
Again, so I think... Each day is a separate yontif because there's an additional miracle each day. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, there are two inyonim in the bracha of Shehechiyanu that we recite on Chanukah. There's a Shehechiyanu on doing the mitzvah, right? That I'm lighting Chanukah candles for the first time in a year. But there's also Shehechiyanu, the fact that it's a yontif, no? We make a Shehechiyanu just on the arrival. I mean, that's actually what the bracha means. Shehechiyanu v'kimon v'giyanu l'zman hazeh. It's about arriving at the time. Now, theoretically, let's say you have somebody who's not going to light Hanukkah candles, so there's no Shehechiyanu on the mitzvah. So one could argue that you could only make a Shehechiyanu the first day of Hanukkah. I would suggest maybe that what we're saying is that the 8 days of Hanukkah, each day... is a new yontiv on some level. So if I didn't make a Shehechiyanu the first day, I can make it the second day. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're saying, hey, Rabbi, if each day is a separate yontiv, shouldn't I make a new Shehechiyanu every single day? So for that, I think, since it doesn't feel like it's a completely new yontiv, one time's enough. Like, even though every day of Sukkot is a new yontiv in theory, I don't make a Shehechiyanu every single day of Chol HaMoed, no? That would not be Orthodox Judaism. Thumb. Thank you. Okay, so let's just go back to Tosfos HaRosh. Ready? Can people hear me, by the way? Is it... You can hear me well. Excellent. Okay. So Tosfos HaRosh's first answer is that they divide the oil up into 8 parts. Question. If there's a shear that the oil is supposed to burn, may erev ad boker, so then when they divide the oil up into 8 parts, they seem to be... relying on a nace. Right? They shouldn't be able to divide the oil up into 8 parts unless they know that this little bit of oil is going to continue burning longer than it's supposed to burn. No?
Yeah, but maybe they have no other options. They're like, oh, it's better for us to have some.
Well, no. They have another option. Couldn't they light the full amount the first night and just forget about everything? No, again, I'm not exactly... I'm having a hard time hearing your conversation and what you're saying, but it seems that the fact that they're dividing the oil up into 8 parts, that shows that they're assuming that the oil is going to burn longer than it naturally would burn. Because according to the natural order of things, it should burn out after 1/8 of the time, and then they won't get the mitzvah. So many of the Mefarshim are bothered by this kasha, and they say something to the effect of, that if you look in the Sefer HaChinuch by the Mitzvah Makkah and others, when they point out Ein Somchen al Hanes, they say that Ein Somchen al Hanes is because you're not sure that a miracle is going to happen. But maybe in this case, that miracles already happened, that they already found this jug of oil, and that itself was miraculous. So maybe that's why they relied on the nes and they divided it up into eight parts. That's what some of the Mefarshim say. Ladies, does the Tosfos HaRosh agree with that approach or not agree with that approach?
Not agree.
Not agree. Good. What does the Tosfos HaRosh say?
Doesn't he give another, like, answer that you put all of it on the first day and then they realize...
That's the second answer to Tosfos HaRosh. There are three answers in the Tosfos HaRosh. There's answer two and answer three. Right now I'm still working on answer one. Answer one is that they divide the oil up into eight parts. But we ask a question on answer one. I ain somchan al hanes. So if you look in the Tosfos HaRosh, he writes... The af agav de aminon ten la midasa kedesha tehei dolekes me'er vad boker. Even though you're supposed to put in enough oil for it to burn all night, hainu hecha de efshar. I think what Tosfos HaRosh is saying is that lichatchila it's supposed to burn all night. If it's possible, it should burn all night. But if it can't happen, if it can't burn all night, so then put in a little bit of oil to allow it to burn somewhat. And you still get the mitzvah hadlakas haminorah. It's almost like the mitzvah hadlakas haminorah lechatchila is supposed to be all night. But if you can't do it all night, okay, not so bad. Right? Hecha de efshar, it should burn all night. Right? If it's possible, it burns all night. If not, it doesn't have to.
Doesn't that support the answer, though? Just that makes sense what they did. They would have gotten the haminorah anyway.
Can you speak louder, Talia?
Right, give it an answer.
It's good? Thumbs up? Okay. So that's answer number one of the Tosfos HaRosh. Answer two of the Tosfos HaRosh is that they put all the oil in the cup the first night, and the oil did not burn, right? The oil, only one-eighth of the oil burned, right? So basically, all the oil is in the cup, and an eighth of the oil burns out each night. So the last night of Chanukah, you have one-eighth of oil that remains, and that's what burned. Now, this second approach is actually very nice, because that means that there is a miracle every night. The miracle is that less oil burns than it's supposed to burn. The third approach in the Tosfos HaRosh is La'acha sheheriku hashemim min hapach b'layla rishona nishar akli molei v'nikar hanes af b'layla rishona. The third answer to Tosfos HaRosh is that the jug, where the oil came from, remained full even after the first night. So I pour all the oil in, and the jug remains full. Now, the third approach has a certain weakness. The weakness is that according to the third approach, there is no miracle on the eighth night. No? Think about it. Every night they fill up the jug, and they fill up the menorah, and the jug of oil remains full. That's true every single night of Chanukah. The jug of oil remains full. That's great. That's amazing. The last night of Chanukah, presumably what happened is, they filled up the jug, and the jug became empty.
They're still using miraculous oil.
Again?
They're still using miraculous oil.
There's no...
They're still using... Like, it was still miraculous oil, because from the night before, the fact that it refilled...
Well, the miracle is on night one, there's a miracle that the jug remained full. On night two, the miracle is the jug still remained full. Night eight, presumably the jug did not remain full, because then you would have a night nine.
Well, that's a miracle that they do in stuff. It's a good
start from top. You're saying the miracle is that the miracle stopped.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. That's like very profound. I'm not exactly sure what that means even. But I get the impression that approach one of the Tosfos HaRosh has a problem based on Ein Somchan al Hanes. approach 3 of the Tosfos HaRash, I think, has a problem, that night 8 of Chanukah, there's no miracle. Approach 2 of the Tosfos HaRash, that 1/8 of the oil burns every night, I think that would mean that there's a miracle each of the 8 nights. So on some level, I think approach 2 of the Tosfos HaRash is the best approach. Thumbs up? Okay,
yeah.
Excellent. Now, the Gemara says, yeah, let's go back to the Gemara. The Gemara says that they found a jug of oil that remained tahar, correct? So Tosfos is bothered by Akasha. What's Tosfos' question? So Tosfos asks that there's a halacha called tumas, the tuma of being mesit or moving. There is a din that if a zav moves an item, even if the item is in a kli cheres, and the kli cheres is mukaf tzamid pasil, the halacha is if I have an earthenware keli, and it is totally covered with a tight lid, so Tumas Mace does not impact on that earthenware keli. That's the halacha. However, there is a Tuma of Hasit, of Mesit, of moving. And that Tuma, did anyone just hear a screeching sound or just me? Oh, okay. Good. So, that tuma being mesit applies to a zav, and the Gemara tells us that they made a gezerah that all goyim have the din of a zav, and therefore it's going to be tumei midrabanan based on tumas mesit. So Tosfos asks Akasha, how come we're not worried about that? So Tosfos answers that the case obviously is that it was munach b'chosam b'karka shelo hisitu akli. Tosfos answers that the keli was not moved at all. The keli somehow is stuck in the ground, it's embedded in the ground, it doesn't move kihuzeh, and that's why there is no tumah. You get the impression, though, that Rashi has a different approach over here. Now, who wants to tell me what Rashi's approach is? Look at the Rashi Bechos Samo. Right, exactly. Rashi says that it was recognizable, it was noticeable that they didn't touch the Kli at all. Because the idea is, I think, and the Ran explains this more clearly, the idea is that if you find a jug of oil and it has a special seal on it, the seal of the Kohen Gadol, if they would have found it at all, they would have broken that seal. They would have tried to get what's inside it. The fact that the seal is intact and they didn't break into it shows that they didn't find it at all. And if they didn't find it at all, that means they didn't move it at all. So I think what Tosfos is saying, that the keli is not movable, is very different than what Rashi is saying, which is that they have evidence that the keli wasn't moved. The evidence is precisely the fact that there's a seal on the jug of oil. That's what Rashi writes, and I think the Ran is amplifying that idea. Okay. Now the Maharsha over here raises a question that how can Tosfos assume that the Tum of Heset already applied, maybe they didn't institute the Tumas Heset until later on in history. So the Maharsha tries to give some sort of answer that it's evident that this is in Bias Sheni. This is the din of Tumas Heset is instituted from the times of Hillel and Shammai, that they said that Goyim are like a Zav. However, it could be that originally they felt that only goyim who were actually zav are like a zav, and maybe not all goyim were like a zav right away. Only later on did they say that all goyim are like a zav, and perhaps that's the answer. In other words, if you look in the Maharsha, Maharsha writes that that gezeira, that kids are tamei as a zav, that gezeira was one of the Yud Ches Dover that Shammai and Hillel had. But at the time of the Chashmonaim, which is earlier on, they felt already that all goyim are metame like a zav. Okay, I mean, again, it's like a detail. It's interesting to note that among some of the Balei HaTosfos, like there is a version called, of Tosfos called the Tosfos Ri Hazakin V'Talmido here on Shabbos. So Tosfos Ri Hazakin V'Talmido, which I have here somewhere on my desk, here. So that's this, if you could see it. That's the Tosfos Ri Hazakin V'Talmido. The Tosfos Ri Hazakin V'Talmido gives precisely the answer, that there's no Tumas Heset over here, because Tumas Heset was not yet instituted until the days of Shammai and Hillel. That means that he's like arguing on that approach in the Maharsha. Okay. Let's go on in the Gemara. Halacha lamai, right? We have a case. This is actually one of the only Mishnayos in Shas that mentions Chanukah, no? Not only is Chanukah not found in Torah Shebiksav, obviously, but Chanukah is really hidden in Torah Sheba'alpeh also. Chanukah is only found mentioned kind of Agav Urchei here in this case, in this Mishnah in Bava Kamma. That's like the only time when Chanukah really comes up in Shas, which itself is very interesting, that Chanukah is largely absent. So some suggest, they quote from Rav Soloveitchik, that the reason why Chanukah is absent from Shas is because the Chashmonaim were themselves Kohanim, and they became kings. And the Ramban writes Al HaTorah on the Pasuk of Lo Yosor Shevet Mi Yehuda, that all kings have to come from Shevet Yehuda. And therefore the Chashmonaim were doing an Aveiro and they became the kings. Reb Yehuda HaNasi, who is from Shevet Yehuda, is kind of upset with the Chashmonaim for usurping his Shevet Yehuda territory. So therefore he shows his upset by not including Chanukah in Mishnayos. That's one suggestion. Now, that suggestion is kind of making Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi look very petty, no? Thumb? Anybody? Okay, good, excellent. It sounds like Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi is very petty from that. So I saw a different suggestion that Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has as to why Chanukah is not mentioned in Shas. How come Chanukah is not found in Mishnayos? Rabbi Shlomo Zalman suggests as follows. The Yontif of Chanukah is the Yontiv that is primarily a celebration of Torah Sheba'alpeh. It's the only Yontiv that has no indication at all in Torah Sheba'alpeh. Even Purim, right, has at least a Megillah, which is Torah Sheba'alpeh, it's part of Ksuvim. But there's nothing about Chanukah in the Ksuvim. Chanukah, right, the book of Chashmonaim never really made it. It's part of the Apocrypha. It's not really Torah Sheba'alpeh. It's all Torah Sheba'alpeh. In order to maintain the Torah Sheba'alpeh nature of Chanukah, they decided to make Chanukah kol kulo Sheba'alpeh. We want Chanukah to be as Baalpeh as possible, and therefore Chanukah is not even mentioned in Mishnayos. This is what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach suggests. The idea is that because the Yevonim wanted to destroy Torah Sheba'alpeh entirely, so we want a Yontif that shows that the oral nature of Torah Sheba'alpeh will remain. The Gemara in Gittin writes that Lo Karsa Kadosh Baruch Hu Bris Im Yisrael Ella Al Torah Sheba'alpeh. The Torah Sheba'alpeh is really our connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam, especially if you understand the idea that the Maariv Chiyuv says. Do they still teach this in Intro to Bible? When I took Intro to Bible in YU, they asked one of the questions, everyone's in YU, but in YU Uptown, when we took Intro to Bible, so one of the questions was, how can you need a Torah Shebikhtav and a Torah Shebaalpeh? And the answer, one of the answers that's given, the Maaretz Chiyus has this, the Be'er Sheva has this, is that Torah Shebikhtav, the written Torah, is intended for the entire world. Torah Shebaalpeh is uniquely Jewish. The problem is that the more we write of Torah Shebaalpeh, the less uniquely Jewish it is. So they wanted Chanukah to remain uniquely Jewish, so therefore they wrote Chanukah down, or I should say, therefore they didn't include Chanukah in Mishnayos to maintain the orality of Chanukah, to keep it completely oral, so that it shows the bris HaKadosh Baruch Hu has specifically with the Jews. It's a special Jewish yontiv. Now, if that's the case, so then this raises one of the interesting paradoxes about Chanukah, which is Chanukah is supposed to be the most Jewish of Yomim Tovim, yet Chanukah, in part because of the time of the year when it falls out, but Chanukah is also the yontiv that has spread the most to the non-Jewish world, no? Everyone has their Chanukah bushes, or whatever it is. I got half a thumb up, so that shows that people are hearing me. Two thumbs up. Thank you, Miss Muscat. That's basically the idea, that we're trying to maintain the orality to show that it's Jewish, yet paradoxically, Chanukah ends up being the most goyish of all of our Yomim Tovim. Okay, so let's go on. So Chanukah is not really a Mishnayos, but we have one reference to Chanukah here in the Mishnah Bava Kamma. If you have a spark that leaves like the anvil of a, if you want to know what an anvil is, just look at the old communist flag of the old Soviet Union. There's an anvil on it. It's like a little hammer that bangs metal. So a spark leaves from the anvil and it creates a spark, and that spark is mazik your chayiv. That's the malacha, or that's the av hamazik of esh. If you have a camel that's carrying flax, and it goes in Rishus HaRabim, and the flax enters your store, and it gets ignited, so then the owner of the camel is chayiv, because his flax is not supposed to be in your store. But if the candle is outside, then the candle owner is chayiv, but by Ner Chanukah, you're potter. Because by Ner Chanukah, you are leaving your candle outside Birishus. And then the Gemara says, this proves that Ner Chanukah is supposed to be beneath 10 tfachim. Can anyone explain to me the raya, the proof that Chanukah candles are supposed to be beneath 10 tfachim? Crickets. Atara.
I think if it was allowed to be more than 10 tfachim, if they were mandated, it would be without the range of the camel, like above the camel.
In other words, the fact that the candles are in a place where it could get caught on the load carried by the camel shows that that's where you're supposed to put your Chanukah candles. Now, here's the thing, though. I don't know how many of you have ever seen camels. It's like a thing. When you're in Israel, you go camel riding, right? So camels are much higher than 10 tefachim, no?
Yeah.
A camel's camels could be like 5-6 feet tall. So a camel's higher than 10 tefachim. So the fact over here in this Gemara, it's really, the Rashba asks the Kasha. It's hard to understand exactly what the Gemara means, how we get the share of 10 tefachim. But apparently the answer is that all we see from our Gemara is I don't have to keep my candle high enough that it should miss the camel. So therefore, my candle could be even lower. Once my candle is lower, so they decided to keep the candles within 10 tefachim, either because, as many of the Mefarshim sound like, the Rashi has this over here. Rashi writes that there's more piersum ha-mitzvah when it's low down. The Rush writes clearly this idea. The idea is that once the candle's not very high up to avoid the camel, so then we want to put the candle in a place where no one puts candles to illuminate. If my candle's there to illuminate, it won't be on the ground. The fact that the candle's on the ground indicates that this is only a candle of a mitzvah, and that's the halacha that the Ner Chanukah is supposed to be toch yud tfachim. So the Gemara at first suggests that we have a raya from this Mishnah in Bava Kamma that the Chanukah candle is supposed to be within 10 tefachim, then the Gemara is doche. The Gemara says, no, maybe we just don't want to bother you too much. Maybe the Chanukah candle doesn't have to be within 10 tefachim, but we don't want to bother you to keep it higher than the camel. Right? Ad kan divrei ha-Gemara. So halacha l'maisa, do the Chanukah candles have to be within 10 tefachim or not? The Gemara suggests that the Mishnah proves it should be within 10 tefachim, then the Gemara is docha it. So halacha l'maisa, do the Chanukah candles have to be within 10 tefachim? Anyone?
We have a really big one, though.
You haven't really? I didn't hear you? You didn't prepare this yet?
No, I was thinking last time we did that, how some bodies really, really big ones all over.
Again, I apologize. I'm having a hard time hearing. But basically, if you look in the Ran notes that this is not quoted in the Rambam. The Rambam never quotes that the Chanukah candles have to be within 10 tefachim, probably because it's rejected. The Gemara moves away from the proof. The Rabbeinu Chananel, however, says that we paskin this way. The Ritva writes that even though the Gemara moves away from the Raya, but the Halacha still remains. Shulchan Aruch paskins that the Ner Chanukah is supposed to be within 10 tefachim, but Shulchan Aruch adds a wrinkle. It adds that it should be within 10 tefachim and above 3 tefachim. The above 3 tefachim, I think, is make-believe, in the sense of it's not found in the Gemara, but the Mechaber quotes above 3 tefachim because he wants to make sure that it's within, it's not within lavud. There's a halacha in mechitzos that whatever is within 3 tefachim is considered like it's closed, like it's attached. If the Chanukah candle would be within 3 tefachim, then the Chanukah candle is mamish on the ground, and that's not good. It has to be between 3 and 10 tefachim. That's the halacha in the Mechaber in Tafresh Ayin Aleph, Si'if Vav.
Wait, can you just repeat why? Like, the whole thing with the 3 tefachim and mechitzos?
So the Mishnah Berurah writes that anything that is within 3 tefachim is as if it's on the ground. And if it's on the ground, it's not going to be clear that I lit the candle. Maybe there's just some candle that happens to be on the ground. That's what the Mishnah Berurah writes. I don't understand that. What I would assume he means is that whatever is within 3 tefachim, based on the halacha of lavud, it's like it's on the ground, and it doesn't, you don't get the impression this is considered a ner shel mitzvah at all. It might not be respectful. I would argue that the halacha is more about, it's not respectful for a mitzvah to just do the mitzvah right on the ground. It's like a sefer. You don't put the sefer on the ground. Shouldn't do a mitzvah on the ground. Therefore, it's above 3 tefachim. But again, I think the mechaber is not based on the Gemara. The Gemara just says that it's supposed to be within 10. But it does not say that it should be above 3. Now, because there are Rishonim, like the Rambam and the Rif, who don't paskin that it should be within 10 tefachim. So that's why the Mishnah Berurah writes, if I have a choice of putting my Chanukah candle by a window, or putting my Chanukah candle within 10 tefachim, I should really put it by the window. Because the window is Medina de Gemara. The 10 tefachim thing may or may not be accepted. The Magid Mishnah writes, in Perek Dalet Halacha Zayin, that since the next Gemara says the Chanukah candles above 20 amos are no good, that implies that anything within 20 amos is good, even less than 10, even more than 10 tefachim. It doesn't have to be less than 10 tefachim. Okay, that's already a suggestion. I'm not exactly sure what to do with that. But basically, as a matter of halacha, we paskin that it's ideal to put it within 10 tefachim, but it certainly is not le'ikov. Okay, I can see from the clock that's behind you that we are nearing 8:10, and there might be people who have to go to make a shuttle. So we'll break over here. B'li Neder, I will try to email some source questions to you. I will also try to come on Monday night to be there for, like, the review, Brianna will be, what's it called? She'll be proctoring the exam, because I have, like, a dentora that day. But we should have the questions. You should be able to review. It should not be that difficult. I apologize for not making it down tonight, but you could blame the shuttle. And as we know, we always like to blame the shuttles. Okay, Chevra, thank you for coming and listening. And all of you who cut honors seminar, whatever it is, yashikoach to you for that as well. Okay, kol tov, bye-bye.
Thank you.